照らすアイアンミー僕らは歩き慣れてきた日々も問うた夢は安泰な暮らしだが刺激不足上にダラダラ照らすアイアンミー僕らの歩き慣れていた道はどこだ時はたまにシャッターが温もりに包まれたが炎があったシルデの方へ思い出すは優しいメロディー言えるはないなどないなどよそれもまたいいなど笑ってみる輝けばいつかは光も耐えるとも痛みを飛ばすのも全部僕にとっての宝物永遠はないだとないだという僕らは命の火が消えるその日まで歩いてゆけ。
Hello, you're listening to the Otaku Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo!
Today's episode is our fall 2019 anime season reviews, part two. We have currently lined up for a review today is Assassin's Pride, Kimono Michi Rise Up, Stars Align, Null and Peta, Fire Force, Sword Art Online, Alicization, War of the Underworld, War of Underworld, I want to say the Underworld, Bokubin, We Never Learn, season two, and Grand Blue Fantasy, the animation's second season.As well as our mid-season or mid-core reviews of My Hero Academia Season 4. Welcome to Demon School Iruma-kun, Fate Grand Order Absolute Demonic Front Babylonia, Blade of the Immortal, Ahiru no Sora, and Babylon, because that is happening. It's like literally two more episodes, and so I can't do a full review yet, damn it.Quite a few to jump through here, so it's probably going to be a decently long episode. Of course, when I say that, that doesn't end up being a long episode. When I say it's not going to be a long episode, it means it's a long episode. Anyways, should dive right into it.
Let's do it.
Yes, again, we're at otakuspirit.com. You can go for all anime, new and old, great community, the forum links at the top, social media links on the right side, and all the good stuff. But yes, let's kick things off with Assassin's Pride. This one streamed on HiDive and Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio EMT Squared.Source is a light novel. Genres are fantasy. And the scriptwriter was Hitomi Mieno, who did Amanchu, Etotama, and Flying Witch. And this one takes place in a kind of a weird alternate reality. You have essentially mankind facing extinction, and they started to reside in city-states of Flandore, which are basically encased inside of glass domes.And they have this ongoing threat from the outside called the Lycanthropes, who exist out on the outside. And as you kind of see throughout the series, kind of make their way inside somehow. They don't really explain anything, but there's a threat. It's from the outside. But yes, they have kind of this whole class system in this world. You have a lot of kind of nobility. We follow a girl named Melita Angel. And Melita Angel is from the Angel family and...Essentially, within every single kind of nobility, you have people that can actually use mana, or basically noble blood has mana. And with each one of these, it seems like they all kind of have different classes capabilities. And within the angel families, they're known for being a family of paladins. And it's really quickly find out that this girl named Melita, she is not exhibiting any kind of mana. She's not able to produce the mana.And so there's become a question of the fact, is she part of this family or was she kind of through the mother, you know, having an affair or something like that? This guy named Kufa Vamper is hired to go in, figure out if she actually is of this noble blood and if she isn't to assassinate her. And so he goes in there, tries to test her out a little bit. He comes in there as her to be a trainer.And as he's kind of working with her, he discovers that she's kind of really trying hard to kind of make a name of herself, do succeed for her father. And at some point, he decides to assist her in kind of unlocking her mana. And that's kind of the things, how kind of things kind of open up. She's now able to exhibit that. does become a fighter, but then the question is, is she a paladin or is she something else? Of course, she has a cousin as well, Elise Angel, who is kind of a sister to her. She is a paladin, and she's already kind of awakened her powers, and she's well-known to people. And, of course, everybody wants her to become, you know, the next in line because she's so awesome. And then you have her going to this academy and trying to train to become a fighter and go through different trials that she is facing. At the same time, Kufa is training her, protecting her, and keeping from the outside influences that are happening, including, like I mentioned earlier, lycanthropes who are doing deeds for certain people. Dun, dun, dun. So your thoughts on Assassin's Pride?
This show is kind of a mess of how I feel about it. This is one of those shows that we talk about every once in a while where the nugget is just right there and it always feels like it's just out of reach. And it's really frustrating to sit through this show and go and try to express whether or not it's a good show. Because I do like it. It was a lot of fun to watch this show. There was a lot of goofy things in here. There was a lot of little intricacies in the background that were very interesting to glom onto. But the problem is that none of these things seem to be fully realized. And after all is said and done, when you walk away from it, you look back and you say to yourself, was this really worth my time? And honestly, you kind of have to question that a little bit. And so that's really kind of where I lean on this one. It is fun, like I said, but it didn't really, all said and done, next month, am I going to even think about Assassin's Pride? Probably not.
I think that's my frustration as well. As I'm watching it, there was a lot of things in there that I did enjoy. I was actually attached to, like, okay, cool. They have like a class system. They have paladins, samurai, maidens, dragoons. Was it Diablos? Was Muley? Whatever her name is. There was this cool little class system. And I was like, oh, this is something that kind of throw some interesting little thing in there. Having, you know, because they always mention the idea that the paladin's like the most powerful of them. And so that's why the angel family is so predominant, is because the paladins are so powerful. And that's the whole issue with Melidia not having that kind of awaken in her, is this struggle of like, well, she isn't a part of this family, is she? Because she doesn't have this really overpowered class to herself. But then at the same time, you have all these little aspects that are kind of touching on, like the lycanthropes and the almost class structure system they have with everything, and these families that seem like they're at each other. But it never really does anything with most of it. It's just really, and then I do appreciate the fact that it was so focused on Melita's story and how she's kind of gaining confidence in herself as she kind of works up the ranks and tries to prove that she's worth something. And Kufa constantly being there to support her and protect her, and what was the term I used for you? Like, Kufa, do you know what grooming is? Felt like he was just grooming this girl. But it does have that whole aspect of like this older looking guy that's kind of grooming this this maiden that is, you know, pure and needs to be protected, and she's constantly not, you know, doesn't have confidence. She's trying to build the confidence, but. Like I said, it has all these cool little aspects to it, and the world kind of really does feel like it's alive in its own regard, and it looks very kind of different. Even though it is kind of magic school-esque, it never really focuses on being a magic school show. I mean, they literally knocked out the first tournaments in like two episodes, and it's just kind of, now we're at this Rosetta's place, and why the hell are they here? And there's guys, you know, executing people in the middle of the road because they're contaminated somehow, but yet they're still staying there. And then they have some kind of ceremony right after this orphanage gets slaughtered. So there's a little bit of kind of like, this feels like it's either going way too fast or the writer just doesn't know where he's going with the story. So there's so many cool things in there, and I really did feel like it was a living world, but at the same time, it never felt like it ever accomplished anything or went anywhere with the stories it was kind of building up, which was the frustrating thing about it.
And there's also the aspect of this being a light novel. And the funny thing about this is a probably a perfect example of somebody trying to work really hard with what they have, because we're talking about the script writer who does Amon Chu and Etotama and Flying Witch, all three of which are shows that I have very much enjoyed. And when he's working with this
I guess it's she
when she's working with
a female name,
I don't remember. When they're working with this particular source material, it seems like they were having a really rough time with this. So it is interesting to take that into consideration.
Yeah, but I think then kind of mentioned earlier is like it wasn't like I ever felt like I wasn't enjoying the show, and that does need to be pointed out. It is a show that I did thoroughly enjoy watching each episode. I was actually impressed by some of the combat sequences. I was actually impressed by certain cases where other studios would use CGI, they didn't, which was cool as well. I always appreciate when they kind of avoid easily, okay, there's a gigantic spider, let's just make it CGI because that's easier than drawing a gigantic spider. That stuff was good. I enjoyed William. I enjoyed Kufa. Kind of they touched a little bit on what he was, and there was a little bit of speculation between me and Chris on what possibly how he awakened Angel's or Melita's power, because they never really kind of, at least we didn't catch it, they never really fully said exactly how he managed to build up her power, how he awakened her power. And so it was kind of cool. These little, you know, nitpicks here or tidbits here and there that we're kind of building on that. Like I said, it didn't feel like I felt like much of it was resolved. I Melita's story, her kind of proving herself to her father. Her father's a really nasty guy, and I don't know why they never really pointed out how nasty he was, but it's like constantly these little situations like, that's like mass murder. But okay, we're going with this. Bye-bye, everybody. Season's over. It just really felt like there was a lot of things that they needed to unpack that they didn't really take time to kind of hit on those individual things. And I think it kind of affected in certain ways in the end because it didn't make it as impactful as it could be. It's like one of those rare cases where instead of me saying, like, this is 24 episodes and it should have been 12, it's like, this is 12 episodes that I think should have been 24. Just to kind of take time to really hit on what they're really saying in certain scenes that they never really did say. But I was entertained throughout the entire thing. It's just, like you said, it doesn't feel like it's going to be a memorable show in the end because it never did enough to really nail in those unique aspects that it had that I did actually was intrigued by. Funny note, I usually enjoy a lot of, like, Akashic Record of Bastard Instructor. I mean, that one had school uniforms that a lot of people criticized. I was like, it was all right. I wasn't bugged by it.
You can't help yourself, can you? You can't help yourself.
This is one of the few ones where they had school uniforms that I was like, I don't like this. There's these one outfits they had. It was a school outfit. So they had, like, these little circles on the chest of these girls, and they were white with this red, like almost a cat eye down the middle of it. And the rest of the outfit, I think, was red. And yeah, it's like, it just looked like booby pockets. And all these girls are completely like surfboards, but, or, cutting boards, but, they still have these little booby pockets, and just, I couldn't get past it. It just didn't look right. I was happy that, what was it, Shenfra, I think it was? They had, like, this very kind of prissy, you would think would be, like, the prissy, like, student council president-ish. Like, she's, like, the uppity girl that is super popular, but then you find out she has, like, this really nasty side, even though she always has a kind demeanor to herself. And she actually ended up being a really cool character that I, again, wish they had a little bit more of.
So we can officially say that apparently booby pockets is your Supersonico thing?
There you go. You have the
short pockets. So I have the pockets coming out of the yeah, shorts, and you have the
short pockets
booby thing going on.
I don't know that it affected me as much as that affected you. That's the only problem.
I don't know. You're even bringing it up in this, so yeah.
And you brought up that one in your review.
Yeah, apparently.
So there you go. Assassin's Pride. I haven't figured out if it's plural or if it's actually possessive. I think some people say it's supposed to be as assassin as possessive, and then others say that it's just assassins, like multiple assassins. I don't know, but there you go.
I think it's a possessive. That's the only way it makes sense.
But Crunchyroll doesn't think so. So Crunchyroll's always right, just like Wikipedia is always right. That says possessive too. I don't know. Kimono Michi Rise Up, or Hatage Kimono Michi. This one is streaming on Funimation and Hulu, ran for 12 episodes. Done by Studio NGI. The source is a manga. The genres are comedy, fantasy, shonen. And the series composition was done by Toko Machida, who did Seven Seeds, Chain Chronicles, Dive, Happy Sugar Life, Lucky Star, yada, yada, yada. And the creator is Natsumi Akatsuki, who did Konosuba. So suffice to say, a lot of hype for us going into this one because Konosuba was fantastic. This one follows a guy named Genzo. He is a wrestler, and at some point he's known as the Animal Mask or Kimono Mask. And as he's wrestling his, what they kind of deem as being like a rival character, Mao, as they're having their match, he jumps onto the ropes and jumps really high, and his dog, for some reason, decides to jump and join him. And they both get transported. The dog and Genzo gets transported to another world. And in this world, it's kind of a fantasy setting. You have orcs and animal people and all different types. And really quickly, as he's summoned there by the princess of the kingdom there, she basically tells him, there's these beasts that are attacking us, and we need you to take care of them. Please save us. And since he really does love animals, you find out that he was like really, really loves animals, like to the point that he was going to quit being a wrestler to open up an animal shop. He is very offended by this because she's telling him to go out and kill these animals and beasts. And so he just drops her on the ground, wrestling style, and
German suplex.
I think. Yeah. And exposes her butt to everybody. And then he kindly covers her up with his cape. And then is chased out of the kingdom, and he becomes an adventurer just to kind of pay bills and open up his little animal pet shop, where he basically goes out, befriends different beasts and animals that are out in the open for these different adventure quests, and then brings back them to his little animal pet shop, and then claims the money to kind of keep the doors open. And then quickly just turns into him just sitting in front of a cage the rest of the show while everybody else is being goofy around him. We're joined by Shigure, who is this girl that was kind of being harassed by, his owner.
I think they were going to sell her.
Yeah, and he kind of rescues her and then harasses the local gang, which is Misha and Wolfgang, and traumatizes Wolfgang because he's a wolf dude, and so he pets the crap out of him to the point that he becomes traumatized.
Becomes submissive, and he doesn't like being submissive.
Yeah, and then some kind of demon daughter girl ends up joining them as well because she just wants to eat things and is fascinated by Genzo. I don't know.
She was a dragonkin or something like that.
Could be. She likes eating everything. So yeah, that's... and also the giant ant that works at his shop too.
And a giant ant.
He's just kind of weird.
I think they gave him a name at some point.
I think so too. So yeah, what are your thoughts on Kimono Michi Rise Up?
This was the opposite to the other show that we were talking about last week. Cautious Hero, where this one started out really solidly strong. I mean, I remember watching this first episode rolling the entire time. I thought it was the funniest thing that I'd ever seen. And this one, unfortunately for me, it dribbled off. And kind of every once in a while there was something funny in there, but this one it's enjoyable. Don't get me wrong, it's enjoyable to watch this show. I didn't have a good time watching it. Some of the stuff was very silly, and it was fun and goofy and not really too much to be invested in. But when it comes down to it, having these two shows next to each other in some cases was probably a good thing, in other ways it was probably a bad thing, because literally you can see one to me started out weak and it ended out very strongly. This one started out strong and ended out very weakly. They literally were exact contrasts to each other. So, but like I said, that doesn't mean that it wasn't a fun show. It definitely was fun. It was a lot of goofiness and hijinks all through the show. A lot of absurdity that Andrew has on his notes, the drop sword. I remember that to a T. Literally every time so-and-so would drop a sword, this other person would come and pick
Heat Haze would drop a sword.
And it and these are not, these are like super legendary swords. So like Excalibur or Durandal, or it's just all these goofy swords that are like the legends of all legends.
And Sigurd would run up and say, oh, somebody, there's a sword here. I guess I'll go sell this. Because I think the only money they ever made was just her selling the weapons that Heat Haze dropped. No, I'm indifferent in the idea that I think they both Cautious Hero and Kimono kind of start out really strong, and they both kind of started feeling like they drapered off really quickly, but then Cautious Hero picked it back up and kind of ran with the torch all the way to the end. Whereas Kimono Omichi never really ever picked itself back up. And it was, which is really frustrating because I love this writer. This writer does, Konosuba is fantastic. It's a golden series. And so the constant desire there is to really kind of pick on, okay, they're both of this writer's work is isekai comedy. And I think the reason one works and the other one doesn't work is Genzo is boring. Like, he's funny that he, like, just totally suplexed the princess right off the bat. And he's goofy in the idea that he's just very creepy in how much he loves animals. But the moment that he gets his little shop, he's just constantly staring at the cages and talking about how he wants to go home and just stare at the dogs and the beasts that he has in his cages. And so you have this guy that is very subtle, gets angry really easy, versus an absolute nut job that is in Konosuba. So your main characters are very contrasting there. And so that's where I think this one loses it, is I don't think the cast supports the show. The cast isn't... you do have Genzo constantly, putting Camilla in a headlock or something like that. But they don't... The main group that is around Genzo, the chemistry sucks. And so it's not a chemistry that works well for a comedy. Hanako is way too toned down, and whenever she does anything, it's a joke about eating something. Whenever Camilla does something, it's just wanting to drink beer and serve Hanako. Sugiro just wants money. Genzo just wants to stare at cages. That isn't a good chemistry to make a ongoing comedy. Every now and then it tricked me.
To throw it in there, to give you an insight, people have to go to the pet shop to engage Genzo. If that doesn't tell you something, I don't know what will. Because literally, the princess to become a part of the story, she had to go and hunt him down, and then beg him at his shop. The quote unquote main bad guy for this particular series, which if you want to call him a bad guy, had to literally go to his house. I mean, we're talking demon lord level stuff. They had to go to his house.
Even the goofy like antics bad guys that are constantly throughout the entire series, even though they're completely traumatized by this guy and do not want to have anything to do with him, when he shows up their place, they freak out. They constantly have to go to him, even though they're traumatized by him. It's like when you have to drag the people who hate him and they're terrified of him to him just to create something, that's where the fear comes. But no, it's... I totally lost my train of thought that I was going with, but it doesn't feel like this has a very solid cast to create a solid comedy. And there, every now and then it did kind of trick me and have a really funny situation, like the goofy cobalt mother that keeps coming he's completely crushing on her because it's a dog woman. She's constantly doing this kind of like goofy melodrama thing where she's like, no, I can't cheat on you. I have a husband and kids. And he's like, but that's okay. Your husband can come too. And it's like, she's thinking like he's cool with having like a threesome or something, but Genzo just wants to pet them. He's so creepy weird how much he loves these kind of beast men and beast women and all types that are in this world. He just loves them to death. And that's really the only kind of ongoing joke. And once that's kind of done so many times, it loses it. I will give him credit for doing some awesome animation in certain situations, like when he fights the Orc King. It's really cool animation, sumo wrestling animation. But or pro wrestling, not sumo wrestling. But yeah, it didn't have enough really there to... I agree with Chris. I wasn't completely bored. I mean, there was times where I really did kind of sigh at watching it. I wasn't looking forward to watching each episode. But I did get entertainment out of it here and there. It was funny because, like, when later on when you have this kind of, I guess you would call it the world's big bad shows up and joins up with this lady that's almost a rival to Hanako, I was like, this is a little bit too late, but this hopefully can give it some kind of injection of fun. But they never show up. They had to go all the way down to find Genzo, and they finally run into each other at the last episode. And it's like, again, there you go. Why wasn't them going to them and having some kind of interaction? It took way too long for them to inject what I thought would be some good chemistry into it. So very disappointed because, like I said, I really do love this creator's work. I love Konosuba, and maybe I was setting my expectations way too high with this one because of the creator, but...
Maybe it gets better in the letter up in like the letter manga, you know? I mean...
No, if you're taking this long, it's not going to happen. But no, my whole point is that, well, at least we still have Konosuba. So it's not like Konosuba went away. Anything else?
No, I don't want to bash it. I really don't. I like I said, it was fun.
Yep, that's Kimono Michi Rise Up. Check that one out if you're looking for an isekai comedy. Oh, can we skip this one?
Not really.
Okay, good. Good. Next one, Stars Align or Hoshiai no Sora. This one streamed on Funimation and Hulu. Ran for 12 episodes. Done by Studio 8-Bit. The source is an original, and the genres are drama, school, slice of life, and sports. And the director and script writer, as well as creator, is Kazuki Akane, who did Code Geass, Escaflowne, and Nuin. And this one follows a guy named, I guess, it follows a lot of people, but I think I guess you can call him the protagonist is probably Maki. And Maki is currently moving into a new apartment with his mother. His mother has separated from their father, which we kind of really quickly realize why is because he's an abusive douchebag. So yeah, they're living at this new apartment and he goes to this new school. And at the school, they have a soft tennis team and... Well, they actually have a female team, and the female team is the ones that actually do really well and go out to competitions, but they also have a boys team, which is headed by Toma, and they are just not a good team. They're slacking off all the time. At some point, Maki catches the attention of Toma, and Toma really kind of says, "Hey, man, you really do need to join our team. Please join our team." And Maki doesn't really want to have anything to do with it. He's like, dude, I have a lot of things to do. I have to get home. I have to clean. I have to cook dinner. And just to kind of get him to get away from him, he's like, okay, well, I'll join you if you give me money. And Toma's like, sure. Okay, I'll do it. And then so Maki's pretty much roped into joining the soft tennis team. You meet the rest of the soft tennis members, which they all kind of have their own things they're dealing with, own personalities, and really quickly what we find out is that even though Maki never played tennis before, he seems to really catch on to it really quickly and notices things that the rest of them don't notice, helps them with setting up pairs, and kind of really re-sparks the desire for them to actually do well. And of course, you have to add in evil, bad student council president saying they're going to cut them off because they're not doing well. And thus they have to kind of prove themselves just to keep the club open and really kind of keep going because they now see that they can actually really play well and going forward. And of course, on the side, you have pretty much different stories about each of the characters. They have the issues they're dealing with back at home, which basically entitles pretty much every one of them having douchebags for parents. Yes. What do you think, Chris? I guess the other thing to note, and I guess he'll probably rant about it, I guess I can rant about now, is that I've been hearing mentioned that this is supposed to go for two cores, and it was canceled to go to two cores, which makes perfect sense because the ending really sucks.
Yeah, this show, the ending on this was absolutely horrible. Yeah.
Way abrupt.
The story
like mid really bad thing happening.
this show, it's really difficult to kind of place exactly where my deepest frustration on this show was, because I think that this had decent writing. The problem was is that it was trying way too freaking hard.
And Mario Kata levels of melodrama.
Yeah,
and where I was getting at.
It's like literally if you had we'll just play it like Andrew was saying. Literally every parent in this group, maybe one is good. The rest of them are all literally child abusive. And this is and yes,
mental and physical.
Yeah, mental and physical. Okay, thank you. I was going to say no, maybe not all physical, but this is the problem. And you can have drama, but the realism is really kind of quickly shut off after the third or fourth parent that wants to hurt their child in some way, shape,
because
or form.
Because they're playing tennis.
Because of this one thing that seems to bother every parent. I mean,
Toma's mom, like, detested his presence. Itsuki's, I'm trying to think of which one was Itsuki. One the father wanted him to play soccer, so he just ended up throwing him down some stairs. One, the parent hated them for didn't want them to go to play tennis. Wanted them to study and for her to protect him. And then, yeah, Toma didn't despise them.
One of them was cool, but he had a secret, quote unquote, and was afraid to tell her because that would probably make her go nuts.
Which
would
probably be in the second core.
In the second core. And that's the thing. And not to mention Maki. The main guy had his dad.
Beat the living fire out of him.
And this is the frustrating thing is you want drama because it gives characters depth of character. But at the same time, literally everybody having almost the exact same kind of problem or exact same drama.
One had the mom poured a kettle of hot water on him when he was a baby.
Yeah.
When he was an infant.
To make him shut up. Oh, yeah, that worked, huh?
Yeah, that works. How'd that work out for you, lady?
So, yeah, that's the main crux of my problem. And I love drama, but this one was way too heavy-handed on one particular type of drama. And that was my main problem.
That's really the thing, because coming in the show, fantastic opening. Really great. Loved the characters right off the bat. Toma and Maki, I was like, this is a great duet of characters. This is going to be great. I think my only issue I had in the first impressions was that I thought Kanako, who was the only female really that was constantly there, felt like she was like the peanut gallery and it constantly had to cut to her criticizing what they were doing. And that was my only complaint, was that every 5 minutes probably less than that, would cut to her saying, why are they even bothering doing this? They're not even going to be successful at this. And it was constantly her jumping on them about doing things. It was a beautiful show. The animation surprised me constantly. There was a few, like, way far shots of, like, you know, a lot of people playing tennis, and it looked like they were all, like, in perfect motion CGI characters. But whenever it was close up, whenever it was watching these boys practice, it was beautiful how they animated them. They were showing, like, Toma's showing them, like, each swing, like a forward swing, a back swing, all this kind of stuff. And it had him, like, doing it slowly, and it was perfect animation. I was completely blown away by it. Most of the show, all the competitions, was excellent animation. It kind of reminds me of the badminton show that we watched a couple seasons ago, where that one I was impressed by how these competitions kept going and they were animating every swing. And maybe they were hiding the reuse of animation, but it worked and it looked fantastic. I love the style of the show. I love how each of the characters look very unique. Everything about this show screamed great. Music was on cue. It just kicks in with the vocals. Everything was done beautifully. But the big stain was by halfway through the show, you realize that every single kid has domestic abuse, and that's their story. And there's too many of them. So there's already an issue of having too many characters. But suddenly out of nowhere, it's like
suddenly they, I guess it's a point in which they realized they weren't going to be able to do 24 episodes. And so they crammed them all into these, I don't know, 4 or 5 episodes to show that all of them have domestic abuse. Don't resolve any of it. Cut off at the end of it with a character about to do something very violent. Yeah. I'm not left with much to enjoy here. I'm left with a really bad ending and a lot of really built up melodrama about apparently every Japanese kid is domestically abused. That's all I can say at the end of it. And that's the frustrating thing because it opened up so beautifully. And I constantly claw at shows that are originals. Every time a studio says we're doing an original series, I want it. And this was showing a lot of promise. It just didn't deliver on it. And in the end, I just felt like it was funny because even at the last competition, I was telling Chris, I think it was like 11th or 12th. No, it was the 12th episode. I'm like, I don't know how they're going to do all this in one episode if they're going to do it, because you have this guy's running after his mom, who apparently left him when he was young. You have, this other character's afraid of his mom showing up and he's calling him on the phone. There's all this stuff's happening and literally none of it gets resolved in the end. And that's really frustrating. I really did want to love this show. It looked beautiful. Music was great. Opened up really fantastic. Just it didn't deliver, and it kind of hit on the same topics for each character, which was frustrating as well. And one character got really weird. The locking the kid in the room. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand that at all, but okay. Oh.
He was abused by his parents.
But, yeah, it had to do with his parents. I will say I was expecting that to go way darker than it did, so I'm glad that it just stuck with him closing her in a room, so. Yeah. I kind of wanted that last scene to happen, too. His dad was a jerk. Oh, so yeah, that's Stars Align. Maybe we'll get a second season. Hey, history has shown when the Otaku Spirit anime cast posts a review and Andrew rants about a show not ending, it gets a sequel.
Does it?
Every time. So we need to do another review of Spice and Wolf, but not the last review we did, because I think the last review we did, I didn't rant on it like I wasn't vicious about it. I was just like, I wish there was more. So I just need to be really angry about it. Like, this Spice and Wolf just cuts off at the end. It needs more. And then maybe we'll get a sequel. So
there we go.
Anyway, sounds anything like else?
Yeah.
Yeah? You have something else to say?
No. Okay. I was going, yeah, on the other thing. I'm sorry.
I got you. So yeah, Stars Align. Check that out if you, if you like melodrama and you want a show that looks really beautiful and has, you know,
a great horrible animation, ending,
and you don't mind, you know, bad endings. I guess cliffhanger endings.
Bad cliffhanger.
It probably won't bother you.
Just bad cliffhanger.
Won't bother you as much as it does me. Maybe. Next one, Nola Peta, or Nol and Peta, or Nol Peta. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll. Ran for 12, I think, episodes. Short. Very short. I think they were like 5 minutes each, I think.
Seems like it.
But yeah, done by Studio Shinny Animation. So this is the, I think, second or maybe third show they did this season. It is an original. The source, or the genres are sci-fi. Yes, 5 minutes each. And, this creator for this one was Hato, who did Nora Princess and the Stray Cat, so that show that we didn't like so much, but hey, it had other stuff that people enjoy, so there you go. This one follows a girl named Noel, and we find out really quickly that Noel has lost her sister. The tragic truck-kun hit Peta, which is her sister, and Noel being kind of a shut-in brainiac, basically creates a robot of her sister, to kind of replace her sister because she misses her sister. And the Peta robot, which is this robot that she created, is pretty on cue, apparently, with her sister, and creates really nasty-looking food that she forces Noel to eat, and they constantly have shenanigans together while not going to school, even though her sister robot even still wants her to go to school, so... I just realized that saying Peta Robo is really hard to say and not sound bad. It sounds like Peta. Peto Robo. Peto Robo. Peta Robo.
If you want it to be that.
Vendetta. Sister Robot. That's what I like to say, Sister Robot. So what's your thoughts on Nullipeta?
This show, it was so funny because I did very much start losing a lot of interest towards the middle of the show. But
The invasion thing really killed it.
Well, and this is the funny thing, because this show was, when it started out, it was cute. Around the middle, it started getting all over the place and became more and more bizarre. And the funny thing about this show is there is a twist at the end. Now, this twist is literally the worst twist in the world and the best twist in the world at the same time, because it literally made everything that happened in this series make sense. And literally, it was the biggest, what is the term, MacGuffin? Just because. It was, this is the thing that explains everything, and yet it's the simplest answer in the world, and yet it was the worst one in the world at the same time. I look back at it and I wonder, do I like it or not? And that's the question that will probably be there for a long time. I think it's cute. It's a little bit hard to follow towards the middle, and then the end makes it all make sense. And that's the best I can say for this, is it is what it is. It's an interesting kind of artifact that I'll probably wonder about for a long time.
I was surprised by it. I really was. Now, opening up, that's what's funny is that aspect. I wonder if Nora, Princess and the Stray Cat's the same situation, because that show felt like it was all over the place from the very beginning, and I wonder if it has a similar way of kind of wrapping things up. But no, I really did. I did enjoy this show. I think starting out, I thought it was really cute, adorable, little sisterly love kind of thing going on, and sister trying to keep her, you know, healthy, go to school, feeding her, and Noel constantly kind of regretting bringing back her sister because her sister's so overbearing. And it got really goofy with it, all the whole episode where Noel, the sister robot's kind of chasing her around and trying to feed her the rice or the breakfast, and it gets to Terminator levels of her like walking out of like just blazing fire, like Terminator 2 style. It was a lot of fun in that regard. I think it was about the point which they started bringing up the sister going out at night and coming back all bruised. That was like at the point where it just got really kind of, it kicks out the comedy and really kind of tries to do something that's not really serious, but just trying to be serious. And I was kind of bored throughout that entire thing. The whole invading blobs thing was very boring. And then at the very end, yeah, it got a really cool little twist in there that really kind of surprised me. It's something that I would never expect out of a short series, and it pulled it off. I think the last time I got a surprise out of a short series was at the Today Show, or that show was called, the one with the different stories in each episode, and they had that one with the kid at the festival, and
oh yeah,
that one was like a huge twist. So yeah, it was good. I did enjoy it. Like I said, it had a little bit of a lulling point in the middle segment, but it had a really solid ending to it. But I mean, for what, an hour of your time, it's a solid little watch. So check that out if you're looking for a comedy with some cute little sister love, and not the bad sister love, don't get me wrong. It's not SysCon stuff. Just, you know, sisterly love. And a cool little ending at the end was really cool. So, Nullipeta.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, next one is Fire Force. This one is a show that's been going on for 2 cores now, so we're finally here to give our take on it. This one is Inen no Shobotai. This one's streamed on Crunchyroll for 24 episodes, done by Studio David Productions. The source is a manga. The genres are action, supernatural, shonen. And the creator is Atsushi Okobu, who was the creator of Soul Eater. So a lot of that style in here of Soul Eater for sure. This basically takes place in a world similar to our current style. But at some point, spontaneous human combustion started happening. People across the world just kind of just lit up in fire. But the oddity here is that instead of just setting on fire,
it seems like they become possessed by like a demon. And so, you know, like a parent can suddenly just burst up in flames, almost seem like they become possessed, attacking people. And so people have to come in there and stop them and extinguish it and take them out. At some point, the Tokyo Armed Forces, the Fire Defense Agency, and the Holy Church of the Soul decide to create like a particular group that would focus on discovering what's causing this and how to resolve it, which is the Fire Force. And we follow a guy named Shinra, who we kind of quickly find out like 12 years prior was involved in a serious issue where his mother was killed by an infernal. And so he decides to make his, you know, work to stop the infernals and help people. And so he joins the company, the Eighth Company. There are several companies that are in the Fire Force. He joins the Eighth Company, full of, you know, interesting individuals. And they go out and they stop the infernals while at the same time, like I said, trying to find out the source of what's causing the infernals. And and then you start getting some crazy stuff with the underground people who are trying to cause it and why they're trying to cause the infernals and all kind of different suspects that throw wrenches in their desire to find and stop the spread. So your thoughts?
This show, I definitely, after having realized that we've been through 24 episodes, I sit here and I wonder, where did that time go? Because this is a show that does definitely suck you in. And by the end of it, you feel like you've gotten a solid episode over and over and over again. I have a hard time thinking back of a time where I was kind of about anything, because I honestly wasn't. The world is definitely intriguing. The characters are definitely, I could do without the little King Arthur kid. He's
oh, come on. He grew on me. He grew on me, especially the horse when he came out from the, what's his face's shop?
Steelba.
When he came out of Vulcan's. He had the horse and he started wrecking things. And the guy's like pointing out, like he had to point out the horse.
He's better the more tuny he is.
Yeah.
The more he
can delusion himself.
This show is really just a mishmash of just everything you want out of most shonens. But then we have the same thing with Death Eater. This guy has a knack for writing intriguing, zany worlds that no matter how crazy it gets or how dark it gets, you're still going to be sucked up in it. It's a fantastic show. It is dark, but take that for what it is.
This is a weird one for me to talk about. I guess to tell my mentality for the show is it's like I open up with the show really loving the style. He has a fantastic style to his work, and it's very unique to his own style. He's very into like skulls and kind of shaded face characters, stuff like that. Fire, he's way into that kind of stuff. It's his thing. And I was really loving this show from the very beginning because, as I mentioned, I think in our first impressions, or maybe it was in our mid-season reviews, what I really loved about the show was that it pulled off haunting shots. Like one of the ones that still sticks in my head, because again, you have this group of people that are kind of like firefighters, but they're not running to a fire at a house just to hose it down and walk people out. They're going to a house, and it was cool because they kind of had a flashback where they mentioned the newcomers that you never brandish your weapon. They're going in there to fight somebody's family member. So when you go there, you put away your weapon when you get out of the vehicle. You can take it back out when you get in there, but do not show it while you're with the family members because you're going in there to stop their family members. And it was very haunting. You basically had these characters go in there. Some of the one that I always remember was the father that was in the house, and the daughter's outside crying because she's already lost her mom to the inferno, and now she's going to lose her dad, and she's going to be all alone. And they go in there, and the father's stopping himself. He's sitting there in his chair holding himself down because he's combusted, but he's not letting the demon take over him. And so it's just this scene where they're all standing on one side of the room, and it's this wide angle shot, and on the left side you have the father just sitting at the dinner table. And I was like, this is like the most haunting thing. It's fantastic. It's brilliantly laid out. It was perfect with the cue on cutting out the sound and everything. And I was totally sold on the show at that point on. Now, I enjoyed the show as they were doing this whole ordeal, and they were slowly introducing the aspect that there might be these people that are causing the infernos. And I liked when they went to the other company, and Shinra's working in the other company, and they introduced Hibana, and I loved Hibana and Iris's story, the nun that's in their group. Love their story, the backstory about the what do we call it, the orphanage that they were a part of, not really an orphanage, the church, and there were nuns in the orphanage. Loved all that stuff. And I think it was up to the point in which they came back to the Eighth Company that I started kind of feeling that the focus shifted from that haunting nature of the infernos and trying to stop whoever's causing them to just strictly trying to hunt down this organization that's causing it. The evangelists. I keep wanting to say evangelians. The evangelists. And it kind of started tapering off for me at that point. Like, I loved Binamaru's story. I loved his town. That was fantastic. But after that, it kind of started losing me. I was like, I almost felt like it completely shifted. But then looking back on it now, I kind of feel like it's not that it shifted away from what I wanted it to be, but it shifted into a shonen. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, it was a fantastic shonen, but it wasn't what it originally was, which was like firefighters and the trauma that causes with these infernos. And so it almost like it morphed for me, but in a way that at the time I felt a little bit upset because I lost that nature. But it kind of gained something else, which is a really weird take on the shonen. The fighting styles was really weird, which I really did like. Kind of like fire wizards, because everybody in this world, with following generations of these combustions, they can kind of learn to control the fire itself rather than let it engulf them. Very unique main character. His whole, I guess that's a lot of the shows, is they have like these main characters in these shonens that have like the most weirdest ability that's kind of out of the norm. Like, he's not just flame throwing out of his hands, it's his feet, and everybody else is more kind of normal that you would think, but he's like the most weirdest out of all of them. Great cast, really uniqueness to them. Hibana I didn't like at first, but I loved her later on. All the characters inside of 8 I loved, whether it's Takehisa, who is like the everything's very strict, go by the book, get your act together kind of character. Akitaru, who's like just the big gentle giant. Loved his kind of style. It was like, just walk in there. He's got no way of controlling fire, so he instead just goes in there with like full body suit, fire retardant suit, and just goes in there and just basically a tank and just runs over people.
Well, and the funny thing is for a guy who literally has no ability, no pyro abilities, he's takes on
Binamaru.
Yeah, he's taking on other captains and holding his own, which is absolutely fantastic.
Using his smarts and his willpower over anything else. Of course, the two best girls, or three best girls in the show, is Maki, who's like more of a wizard type, Iris, who's the nun, always going in there and doing the Lottum thing. Like I said, having a really fantastic backstory to her.
Tamaki's technically not a part of the eight.
She did become a, what do they call it, a supplement member or whatever. My biggest sadness in this whole thing was that I loved Tamaki so much. They never did anything with her. I felt so, so sad that a character, I loved her character design, I loved the goofy accidental pervert to her, and but her, like, kind of, they never had her have her moment. She had the coolest fighting style.
Did have a great moment towards the beginning, but it was swallowed up by all the other stuff since then. That is the one moment in the entire show that stands out more than anything was her breakdown in front of Shinra. That was absolutely a fantastic, beautiful scene.
Yeah, I'm just bringing more on the idea of her actually fighting and doing cool stuff. She just got beat up a lot, which was sucky, but you can't always get it. But yeah, that's I guess my only biggest gripe that I have with the entire series is I love David Productions when they go crazy. Like, the last fight was insane animation. Like, it was almost as if they were like, all right, we have some spare time, let's just blow everybody away. And they just went nuts with it, and it was fantastic. They have a lot of really fantastic fight scenes in this show. But the thing I don't like about their style, at least the style that they use with Fire Force, is they had a lot of like wide-angle shots of just characters talking in a room and no faces on them, just sitting there for like several minutes. And it felt like they were taking out a lot of the living in the world. Like, it felt like an empty world. It felt like it had no life to it, because there was all these shots that were just characters from far away in an empty room with nobody around, just standing there with blank faces talking. And that was a kind of a letdown for me, because I have enjoyed a lot of David Productions' work. I haven't watched any of the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, but I feel like they are a studio that a lot of people give a lot of praise to, and they do a lot of great stuff here. Just, it feels like every now and then, I guess it's them just kind of taking breaks from doing crazy animation scenes when they do it, but it just feels like they cut themselves short by really kind of killing the liveliness of the world every now and then, which I was kind of unfortunate. But like I said, when they get the action scenes, a lot of them were fantastic fight scenes. So I guess I can just give them credit for that and just move on from there. But I do feel like they did a good job with Atsushi's work, though. So that's a plus as well. Yeah.
Where's our Soul Eater remake?
Yeah, just do that instead. Don't do Fire Force.
No, they can continue Fire Force. Just need a Soul Eater remake.
I want to say that they said there was a second season, didn't they? A Fire Force coming? Maybe this was the weird one where I was surprised that there wasn't anything so far. Let's see if there's an OVA. Yep. They have a sequel coming in July of 2020. So look forward to more Fire Force coming up. Which I think it needs it. I think it really did feel like... of course, it's a big, long show, and there's going to be a lot of stuff unanswered. But I really did feel like it was a solid chapter end. So don't get me wrong. You can definitely jump in right now and not feel like you're being left on a hook. But definitely looking forward to more. There's a lot of stuff they can do with this world. So, yeah. And hopefully Tamaki will have her moment, because she's, of course, best girl. Fight me for it. I loved Maki and Iris too, though, so don't get me wrong. That was a struggle one. That was a very much struggle best girl on that one. But it's funny, because what sucks is I lean towards like Maki and Iris, because I feel like they didn't do enough with Tamaki. I mean, Maki towards the end was just kicking butt. I loved her little wizard thing with the two fire spirit or fire essences, or whatever you want to call them. All right, Sword Art Online, Alicization, War of Underworld, Part 1. We got Part 2 coming later. This one's streamed on Funimation, Crunchyroll, and HiDive. Ran for 12 episodes. The second half, again, will be in spring 2020, so... Which kind of sucked, because I literally thought that was going to be another episode, because that ended literally felt like, okay, well, next episode. Like, literally, somebody comes out of the sky and stands in front of another character and is like, done. Okay. Oh, you know, they showed the other laughing, coughing guy walking down the hall. What's this, there's so many damn laughing, coughing people. What the hell? They're like everywhere, too. They're mercenaries. They're in the government. I don't know. Everywhere. They're like at your local discount store.
Jeez. Anyway, the person listening to this is probably laughing, coughing.
Probably. I would not doubt that. But yes.
Am I a laughing, coughing? Or are you a laughing, coughing?
As long as I'm not Kirito, I don't have to worry. Apparently, they're obsessed with killing Kirito. So yeah, this one, of
Course Studios, A1 Pictures, based off a light novel, action, adventures, fantasy, game, romance. Do I even need to explain things? Of course, the particularly Alicization War of the Underworld is the second part of the Alicization arc, which in the Alicization arc, we had Kito get knocked into a coma, get put into this huge, crazy underworld system that somebody who's working with was working on, which was this big, huge effort to create, like, war AIs for, like, drones and stuff. And it's basically the virtual reality this one uses is it taps into what they believe is the spot in the brain that contains the soul. And in this particular world is just a massive amount of actual souls they've kind of injected into this world. And they're trying to build up these souls, give them real life experiences so that they can then be taken out of there after this big last battle, put into AIs and be, you know, warriors to fight in actual real life wars. So it's a weird concept, but we're going with it. But anyways, Kirito's in this world because he's in a coma, but he now, at this point in the War of the Underworld, has been knocked in a coma inside the coma because somebody screwed up something in the real world and it zapped his brain, messed up his floodlight, and now, which is the spot where his soul's at, and now he's in a coma in the coma. So, yeah. Now Alice is taking care of him because he, of course, helped Alice break out from under Quinella, who was this big, evil, I guess, leader of this entire area. And so now Alice is taking care of Kito out in the middle of nowhere because everybody sees him as, you know, taboo people. And so, yeah, that quickly changes as Gabriel, who is leading the bad guys that are trying to break into this facility that has the underworld servers and everything in it, trying to steal Alice from them. And he is now tapped in with his buddy and decides to take everybody from the, what do they call it, the area beyond the gate. I forget what that area was called. The bad Beastman area. Gather them all up, raise them up into arms, and go kill the humans in the land in order for him to find Alice. And so there's a big, gigantic war between all of the remnants of Quinella's, you know, knights and everything, all raising arms to take on just massive amounts of goblin people, troll people, kobold people, wizard people, you name it. There's a whole clan to them. There's the monk people, which they were kind of cool.
Pugilists,
yeah, I guess called pugilists. But yes, so a big war happens, and all the while, Kirito's sitting there with blank eyes, and Asuna finally joins him at some point, which was cool. And
at the very
end. We're kind of left with just a big battle kind of coming to a end, Alice being in danger, and we cut off. So, yeah. I guess you could just say this entire season was just mostly just big fights. Which, I mean, they're great fights. Don't get me wrong. I think the only negative that I had with this particular core altogether was probably the tapping into the core thing. That came out of nowhere, and I just really feel like it's just an excuse to have, like, a, I don't know, some kind of Dragon Ball Super Saiyan mode in this particular world, which just didn't really, there's no explanation for it, and just happens, and it's just like, okay, that happened. Like, Gabriel's sitting there, and this dude finds out that his loved one's gone, and he goes freaking nuts because this inner thing where his floodlight's at breaks or something, and then he just turns into a gigantic tornado, and then Gabriel's like, oh, because I'm Gabriel, you're done. Boom. And then, okay, we're moving on. And in the middle of the battle, constantly, like, different sides will have somebody that's like, I'm losing and I can't lose, and then suddenly, roar, and then, like, digital fragmenting happens, they unlock their super inner flux light, and then they explode in superpowers, and then I'm like, okay, we're doing this now, I don't understand this, but sure. But other than that, I did enjoy it. It was cool to kind of see a lot of the different knights that were from the previous leadership kind of going out there on their own accord, kind of
some of them not knowing, kind of having a lost purpose, but still desiring to protect the people, to protect the land, and go out there and actually fight off these invading forces. So it was cool to kind of see technically some of them that we never seen before, like Sketa. We never really seen her before. She was really awesome, had like the super thin blade and just kind of slices everything with no effort. That was really cool. Renly, kind of stupid at first, but turned into a solid character going out there to fight. Always love seeing more of Finacio. I was really excited to see her come back because she was a favorite of mine in the earlier segments of Alicization. So, and like I said earlier, I did like that some of the clans weren't really completely, I guess, portrayed as being unsavable. So there was an aspect there of kind of, yeah, technically these sides can kind of come together. And then, of course, introducing the evil United States gamers to it is always good, too. So good to know that the writer loves us, us Western gamers. It was goofy just coming in there like, oh, this is really fun.
We all love PvP after all. You know that.
Oh, yeah, I'm totally just going to download a game, jump in there, start slashing it. So that sounds really cool, especially at... It's so funny. That's one of those aspects of, like, why doesn't anybody ever, like, hesitate to play these games after what happened with Sword Art Online? But they're just like, okay, cool, a new game. Let me tap in and VR. This is not going to hurt me in any way, shape, or form. But I guess they've changed the technology, so... I guess there's an aspect of it shouldn't happen anymore. Shouldn't.
Well, they would have lied on their sign up page, but they did.
We might use a way to zap your brain.
they did technically say that there was no pain block or whatever, so you were gonna get the full amount of the pain.
Yeah, and us Western gamers like, yeah,
yeah, we just love pain. We just love it. Yeah,
I was happy to actually have. My girl actually have a scene. Yes, Lisbeth finally had a scene. Now, for those that don't know, the original Sword Art Online, Lisbeth was my best girl. And it sucks because Lisbeth never has any scenes after her,
like,
one episode.
Seven seasons later.
She has her one episode in the original Sword Art Online, and ever since then, she may have one sentence in every conversation. That's it. She finally has, like, this big old grandstanding moment in front of a whole bunch of people, past friends, big long speech, and I'm like, yay, finally. I was like, is that, yeah, that's Lisbeth and not one of the other girls that has all the screen share, like Asna and Sinan and everything. So it was cool to have best girl have a moment finally. So I was happy about that. So if I didn't enjoy anything else in the show, the action scenes were great, animation was cool. Really powerful moments of, like, kind of turning the tables on the tides. I love the aspect of the essences that they usually normally use to in combat being kind of removed from them or robbed from them, so to speak. That was kind of a cool little, I guess, strategic twist that they had in the middle of the battle, which was cool. Loved seeing some reunions. Loved seeing some new combatants in the harem battle. That was funny. Ronnie's like, he was my senpai. I trained with him for a long time.
I was like, some person that you've never seen before. I trained him for 15 years. Wait, who are you?
Asna and Alice fighting, and then she just comes up and says, me too. No, and they also had his instructor too.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, that was funny. I trained him for many years. It was kind of one of those moments where, because we talked about originally in the original Alicization, we were like, this is really cool because it's kind of a reset for Kirito. You kind of removed that gigantic harem that is constantly surrounding him as he does anything. You kind of removed all that from him and kind of had him start from square one. And it didn't feel very harem-y. The entire first two cores, and even this one, doesn't really feel harem-y. Because besides, like I said, his master that trained him in the academy kind of had a thing for him, but never really kind of did anything with it. Then he had Ronnie, who is his Kohai that he helped out. she kind of showed that she was dreading him being taken away by Alice. But there never was, like, you know, Renier, his trainer, Alice, like, constantly, you know, fighting over him. So it never felt like there was... Their harem aspect has been removed, like, all of Alicization. And then to finally have this one moment at the very end, I admit, was like, oh, here, it's Sora Online again. They're doing the harem thing, fighting over Kirito out of nowhere. So it was funny to kind of see that reunion and that aspect get sparked up again. So
it's, for me, this particular section.
That's right, I
haven't
let you talk at all for this, huh? Sorry.
This particular section for me has been a kind of a weird conglomeration. I will give it the character moments. There are some fantastic character moments from some of the battle moments where some character will show up and just absolutely beat all as far as how awesome that character is. Some of the really touching character moments from it, like Andrew was saying, in the Darklands or whatever they're called, where, like, in particular, these orc characters, and they really humanize these particular characters. So
yeah,
they did really
sacrifice,
really fantastic stuff in the character moments. So please don't take that away.
Overall,
this show was fantastic. But now,
what?
My downside is the war, which has taken literally, what, 12 episodes, 13? I mean, it seems like it's been going on forever. The war itself has great moments in it, but the war is antagonizingly slow. I feel like not much has happened moment to moment. It's okay, weird battle, and then suddenly a really great character moment. Then battle, something is happening. So-and-so is doing this wave, or so-and-so is doing that wave. The bad guy is laughing about how he's in total control, and then we're going back to the battle for a few minutes. Great character moment. And then back into the battle for a few moments. Oh, we're going over here to Bertolli, and he's talking to Alice for a second. Then you go back to battle. This is kind of really where I go back and forth on this particular section. I like it in some respects, and other respects, I was really, really kind of droned on a lot of it with hurry up, get to a great character moment or something, because obviously you're battling.
Yep. That's Sword Art Online Alicization. Sorry, I'm not going to bring it back up to you after you did that. Just going to leave it there.
Darn.
He's like, turns to me like, now say something positive, Andrew. It's cool. I'm looking forward to more.
I am too.
Had to wait.
It's really a matter of, this is a part that it's obviously okay, needed to get through.
It's okay, Chris.
I didn't like the battle. Okay?
Talk about We Never Learn Bokubin, which the second season hit, which is 13 episodes and done by Silver and Arvo Animation, based off of a manga with comedy harem romance school shonen aspects to it. The Japanese title is Bokutachi wa Benkyo ga Denkinai 2. So, what do you think? I have no clue about the show, so you're going to have to take it all away.
I went back to...
What's it about?
It's about
a guy training girls.
It's about a guy who is on a kind of a. He's trying really hard to get a.
Well, that's right, the scholarship.
A scholarship,
thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And they forced him to train girls.
He had it. He was at the level where he pretty much had it, and I'm assuming that other people had around the same amount or something, because he was offered, hey, if you do this, we will go ahead and give you the scholarship, because they had to actually speak for him or something like that, and then he would get the scholarship. Now the scholarship was a great scholarship; it would allow him to go to any school he wanted, and that's pretty much the gist of it. Now he's got the two girls. It starts out with two girls, and then it, of course, goes on from there. Here's the funny thing. I went back to listen to my old review of the first season. And after finishing up this show, the second season, let me be clear. This is for the second season. I was moderately happy. It was a good ending for what they did. They did a kind of a mystery character is the one, and that's about all that you're going to get for your ending. Now, going back to the first season and listening to my initial review, I bumped into this kind of an issue that I have right now, because in one respect, listening to my original review, there was something that I was very, very hot on at the Ooh. End of the first season. Ooh. I was happy. I was absolutely thrilled. I loved this show for one particular reason. And it was a reason that I was actually trying to get, I was trying to hint that Andrew might enjoy watching this particular show. Coming into the second season, one of the things that after my review, listening to it, realizing, remembering, and I know what it was that I was really hot on. And now I'm kind of questioning, do I still enjoy it after taking that into consideration? If you had watched both the first season and the second season, this is something that I think would be an issue. I was very happy. And one of the things that I was reserved about in the first season was how they would go around a finality that they had inserted at the end of the first season. Now, that does not mean that they broke that promise. It is still a thing after the whole thing is done in the second season. However, here's the thing. Remember, this is a harem, so I'm trying to talk vaguely and still keep it make sense to the people who have watched it. I still can say it is worth Andrew's watching. However, there is a kind of a twist towards the end that does make questionable at the end. And that is a natural continuation of life in general, not necessarily that they kind of closed anything off. This show still has some excellent character writing. When it goes into backstory, it really does a phenomenal job. In the first season, I was highly turned off by the teacher. The second season, I actually really enjoy the teacher. That is how much when this person actually does character writing and actually dives into a character, they are actually really well done. The first season took care of Ogata and the childhood friend. Still, yeah, if you listen to my first thing, you know who I'm talking about. In the second season, you know who I'm talking about. They've added a senpai, which I really, really love the senpai. But that's more of a character artwork per se. They didn't really dig into her so much. She's a great character in general. They finally dug into Furuhashi, which was one character that you, if I remember right, you liked. She was absolutely phenomenal when they finally dug into her. Her where she wants to go, it was astrology. Ogata wants to go into psychology, which is interesting. I know we were talking about whether or not what she was wanting to do. It is psychology she wanted to get into. The swimmer, she's going into what she's going into. Wonderful all around. When it comes down to it, when there's character stories, it's done really, really well, much better than most harems. And that's one thing that I will give this show, no matter how many times I watch it. But yeah, there's still harem hijinks and, you know, Lucky Letcher per se. But it's a great show, and I did enjoy it both seasons. I can recommend it. Yeah,
there you go, Bogoban season 2. Last one we have is Granblue Fantasy, the second season. This one was streamed on Crunchyroll and Funimation High Dive. Ran for 13 episodes, done by Studio MAPPA. the sources of game, genres are adventure and fantasy. And this one, of course, for those who don't know, takes place in a world of islands in the clouds, essentially. We follow a guy named Gran, who had a girl fall from the sky. Her name is Lyria, and she was an experiment being done by this evil corporation, evil military force. And Catalina, who was kind of trying to rescue her. And so Gran joins up with Lyria and Catalina as they go from island to island, capturing spirits that are in each one of these locations, becoming skyfarers, off to find the Estalucia, which is the island of stars, because that was where his father said that he was at in a letter that Gran found. So yeah, it just kind of continues that on. They still have the same band of friends that they've kind of gathered over the last, the first season, and they just continue on going to more locations and finding other people and helping them out, and then eventually having Lyria capture the spirit that's at that location. So, same formula as the first season. I think the only thing that kind of really surprised me is, yeah, technically with the first season, we had a little bit of Io's story, which was the mage of the group. I think technically when they introduced her, they kind of did a little bit of character development for her, character backstory to her. But it seemed like most of the other characters, besides, you know, really diving into Gran at the very beginning and having a moment with Lyria midway through it, or was it late into it? I don't remember. It never really felt like it was really diving into characters, and I really felt like the second season decided to really dive into a lot of these characters. We got a full backstory, or not a really full backstory, but we got some insights into Rackham when he was a kid. We had the whole thing with Catalina and her entire story of when she was in the academy and her relationships with her with Vera that she had met there, and the whole thing behind the island and how there has to be somebody that stays there and kind of makes a pact with the spirit there, and they have to remain there. They can't leave the island, and how her friend kind of almost sacrificed herself to let Catalina go off and join the knightshood and travel. So it really did feel like they decided to kind of grab several of these characters and really kind of dive into their backstories. We even had a little bit more into Sturm and Drang, who was a part of Orchis and the Black Knight. We got the backstory to Orchis and the Black Knight, so that was fantastic as well. Had a cool little story to them. Not like seriously deep, but a cool little snippet of story of them, which was kind of unexpected as well. So I didn't really feel like this season was kind of did really well in kind of diving into the characters. Now, it still had the usual episodic shenanigans mixed in there as well, having that idea of come to island, waken a spirit, capture the spirit, leave island kind of aspect, meet cool characters, then leave them behind, which really frustrated me with the first episode, because I really liked Eliza, and I was like, did you guys need a physical, you know, front line attacker? You just have Gran right now. You need more physical frontline attackers. All you have is Rackham, who's technically a range. You have Yugen, who's a range. You have Io, who's a caster range. I guess Catalina is technically also a physical front, but
even when they have a character who's like practically begging to go with them, they end up staying anyway.
That is a frustration. Like with a certain character, like. What was it like about halfway through it when they finally resolved that whole thing? It's like literally that character's obsessed with that with this other character. There's no reason why they wouldn't join them right now. It's kind of a goofy aspect. Even they had like a character later on. I'm like, it's so funny. They're gonna find some reason for him. Yeah, he stays. It's like, they never go with them. It's so goofy how it's just. And I guess that's fine because they already have a pretty full cast, and so I do kind of see that they wouldn't want to kind of keep bringing on new characters, but it just kind of sucks because there's that's the thing with Grand Blue Fantasy, and that's the thing that always makes me want to kind of play it, is like they have such fantastic character designs, and I love all the characters that pop up in the series because I just like, oh my gosh, this is a cool character design, I love this character design, and they can't fit them all in the cast, so they kind of leave them behind. Now, it was funny because I almost expected them at the very end to do like a whole same scenario they did with the first season, where it seemed like out of nowhere at the last episode, tons of different gotcha characters started flying onto the screen. It was fantastic. Even the little chibi knight girl was in there in that whole situation, but they didn't really do that with this season in particular. They did have a girl episode, and that came in the middle of the season.
Yeah,
it kind of threw me off. I guess they were trying to fit it around October, probably what it was. But that it was funny because Jita's episode this time last season was an absolute goofball comedy episode. It was just absolutely funny, just all over the place. With this season, it was like more somber and emotional than anything. It wasn't really a funny episode, which was kind of threw me off.
Was a bittersweet episode, is what I would call it.
Yeah. I loved Cagliostro, though, because when she popped up, I was like, oh, there's Nero. That's Nero's voice. So I immediately loved her character. I even liked Ferry, who was actually in the later episodes with Gran, which was kind of surprising. So she both had, like, a moment in Jita's story where she didn't know who she was, and then we have her story in Gran where she learns who she was. So it was kind of funny in that regard. But yeah, it's just, it was kind of hard for us, or it was hard for me to get the desire to go back to it because we kind of left this show behind and then later on came back to finish it off. And I almost felt like I didn't have a desire to go back and watch it just because this show excels at visuals. It didn't have fantastical animation moments like the first season had. It seemed like MAPPA was really kind of not trying to go crazy like they did with the first season. MAPPA went crazy. There was insane action scenes. This one didn't seem like they tried all that hard. I mean, the fight with Catalina and during her arc, the fight that Catalina had and Gran had in Catalina's arc, that was a cool one. I thought that was a really awesome little action scene. Even like the later fight with the Black Knight didn't seem like there was as much of the crazy awesome action that you're used to with MAPPA. Don't get me wrong, there's still some really great moments in there, but it really did feel like they kind of didn't go crazy like they did previously. But I didn't really have a huge desire to watch this season. And it's not that anything is particularly wrong with it, but it felt more formulaic than normal, even though you did have some great character moments in there. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just kind of getting over the world that's in Grand Blue Fantasy, even though I really love the characters.
Yeah, for me, it was just pretty much it did well when it was trying to dig into characters, but it just doesn't have a depth that makes you want to keep going. It just kind of is just an adventure romp is really the best way to describe it. You don't have to have too much investment in much of any of the characters. You just enjoy the little,
feels very Pokemon-ish.
Yeah.
You just travel somewhere else, new characters, leave them behind.
And that's that comes around to most of what it is. And it is enjoyable. You do have fun watching it. And well, at least I had fun watching it. And that's enjoyable to see especially like Andrew was saying, a lot of the character artwork is just an eyeful. You just gorgeous from character to character. Everybody is unique and has an interesting design, and you want to see who's the next character that's going to come out of nowhere. You're going to go, well, obviously that character is a character in the game. That character, probably not. That's one of those generic background characters.
There's a hard contrast between gacha characters and regular standard characters. No, I really was happy to have, like, plenty of Sturm this time around, because I don't know why, but I really love her character design, so. Was it, like, two episodes, maybe three episodes of Sturm, Drang, and Fairy? With the ghost ship and the zombies? That was kind of a out-of-nowhere kind of thing. So. Yeah. Grand Blue Fantasy Season 2. That's it for that one. And now we have nothing left but pretty much our thoughts on shows that are continuing on into the winter 2020 season. So not going to go in huge detail, but give our thoughts on these as just let people know how they're panning out for us. And we'll give our full reviews, of course, at the end of winter. So starting off with My Hero Academia season 4, it's been we had the passing of the baton from All Might to all the students and telling them, look, it's your turn now, go up there and win, you become heroes yourself. And so it's a lot of bad guys kind of taking that in their own way. So we have Overhaul and Tomura are both kind of trying to create their own criminal sects, and then they have at some point them trying to form a partnership between the two of them. Didn't go well with the first meeting.
No.
Went better apparently with the second meeting, but yeah, basically Overhaul producing a new drug to steal the powers from people and by doing that basically torturing a little girl. And so Deku joins Night Eyes what do you call them?
I guess agency.
Agency, yeah, I guess is the best way to put it. And starts to essentially try to figure out where this girl is and where Overhaul is, and then eventually we invade Overhaul's place. So what are you thinking so far?
I'm at a loss as to when I'm supposed to start disliking My Hero Academia. I really, really am enjoying the show. From season to season, it just seems to keep getting better and better. And to top it all off, this season ends in the best poetic thing ever.
Well, not in the season, it's just a mid-season.
Well, mid-season, whatever. Just to finish it off with a lolly overpower super thing. And it was
a lolly battery backpack. Say it right. Deku gets a lolly battery backpack.
It was absolutely fantastic. I loved it. And it just was an icing on the cake for what was a really, really solid season of agonizing over frustrations with not being able to do what you really, really want to do because of the danger involved in different people and going over different things like that. Talking about with Night Eye and his power and whether or not the future can be changed or not. It's stuff like that. It was a fantastic season for just or core or whatever for of things that just really, really it was just a great season. I enjoyed it a lot.
What's crazy is they've kind of, and the same thing is with Tomura. Tomura and Overhaul have the same similar aspect of them being like a villain in this series. They both have this aspect that all they have to do is touch somebody and they can literally kill them. So it does kind of lend itself to this kind of fear constantly of like, is this next turn they're going to suddenly have him completely wreck somebody and just completely change the face of their, you know, everybody's partnership, like losing somebody or something like that was a constant threat there. So that's been pretty exhilarating. The desire to help Eri, who is obviously being absolutely tortured endlessly, is kind of driving a lot of emotion. They constantly have this great ability to create just high tension moments, great music moments. Action's always there. The animation's always there. So there's never a single moment that I'm not really thoroughly enjoying the show, and it just keeps going with it. Even Red Riot, getting his backstory was great. I totally didn't know that him and Pinky had a thing, but apparently that's a thing. Sun Eater's moment was great, too. Having him kind of stand up to a whole group of villains was really fantastic. Fat Gum's fight against what the hell was his name?
That was awesome. I remember coming at it when they finished that out, and I was like, how in the world do they make everybody epic? Every ending just so they pull it off nearly every time.
When did they not?
I don't know.
You said nearly.
I was going to say every time, but then I was like, well, no, somebody's going to call me out on it.
Well, there was this one time. It was one time you said in this one review that you didn't like this one fight.
Yeah, it's great. I love more Himiko. We got some more Himiko action, so she was fantastic in this season. She's so brutal, like when she fights, because she's just got like she just shapeshifts. So you know that anything she's gonna do is gonna be just strictly out of physical contact. She's just flipping over people and stabbing people in the back. I'm like, holy crap, that's what Himiko does. She's just going nuts on this guy. That was cool. Ryukyu was cool as well. A huge surprise on her. She's like turned this gigantic dragon. That was fantastic. So a lot of great moments again, as usual. Love Tagata fighting. That was one of the first times I really seen him kind of go all out. So that was great as well. So yeah. And we're literally right now caught in the middle of this, a really huge battle, Lolly Battery Backpack happening, really showing essentially the full potential of Deku that we haven't quite seen yet. So this is a moment. So really enjoying it. So we'll see how the rest of the season ends, and let you guys know. If something crazy happens, we'll do a spoiler cast. But
until then, suddenly hate it.
Yeah, kill off the Lolly. It's all it takes, and Chris stops. Welcome to Demon School, Inuma-kun. Still enjoying it. I guess I've pretty much technically stopped at like what, 4 or 5, and then you kind of just went off with it. So how is it going?
Oh, this is a show. This is about Iruma. He just, his family sold him off to a demon lord, and the demon lord brought him to hell and put him into school. Pretty much it. He wants to spoil Iruma and wants to just make a grandson out of him. That's all that it really is. This show, I was mulling it over in my head as to what, because I think the most people want to kind of put this in the same category as Rosario and Vampire. And I can see the similarities because it's effectively, there's no ecchi in the show. So saying like, it has,
do not loot these characters. The character designs aren't that great.
So to say that there's not even a real harem-y aspect to it. I mean, I guess you can kind of say it's harem-y, but it's not, at least not yet. And I'm 14, 15 episodes in. I am a couple of episodes behind. So if something randomly changes in the next two episodes, you're going to have to really, really change a lot of things to make this a harem. So I'm going to say it's not a harem. The funny thing is I don't think Rosario and Vampire quite fits it. Strangely enough, I would say this is more closer to Harry Potter than I think that a lot of people wanted to call the Trigger show. They wanted to call that Harry Potter.
Little Witch Academia.
Little Witch Academia. I would say this is more like Harry Potter, mostly on the aspect of you have literally an underdog story of a kid who has. Now, just take away Harry Potter's magic and you've got Iruma. Now, he's getting a ways around that problem by tapping into different aspects that are making him magical. But he doesn't really have magical abilities. He's a human in a demon realm. So he's literally going around, and it's just the zaniness of this world. And so that's why I say it's a lot more like Harry Potter than Little Witch Academia, which is zany in its own right, just not like this, where it's just continually going on. And the funny thing is that as he's going through all these different things, he's meeting different characters. Each character has their own little weird quirk, just like you would expect in shows like this. And that's, I think, the real charm to this show is literally him, of course, hiding the fact that he's a human, accidentally becoming the most powerful person in the school. And that's the funny thing about this show.
He summoned the teacher. I was like, holy crap, he's way overpowered.
And he's not, and that literally is the thing. He's not overpowered. He just accidentally becomes the most powerful. And that's even when they talk about a prophecy for the next demon lord, it's like, obviously you're talking about Iruma-kun. Why? Because he's an accident at the entire thing. So that's what I think is really the charm of this show. It's not a pretty show. It's kind of moderate. There's a lot of, it's not sloppy anime, but there is a lot of, the characters are just kind of more plain, but it's a fun story, and it's goofy and really zany in a lot of situations. To give you an idea of how this show works is the student council president. He's already effectively accidentally beaten the strongest person in his particular level of the school, the first years. The student council president is in a second year, and in theory, he's got her as one of his friends per se right now, but he hasn't conquered her yet. So keep that in mind. But she has a hidden side where she has this entire room full of human manga. He's the only one who can read human mangas. So he actually has a secret on her that she will not want to let the entire school know. And I'm sure that's going to come into play at some point later on in this show. That's how this show works, is to beat another demon. They haven't shown that. If you somehow cause that other demon to submit to you in some way, shape, or form, then you become their master. And that's the funny thing about this show. That's why it's going to be kind of weird to see how they keep on doing, because each one of them has their own thing that they're doing. So it's a weird show, and I'm having a lot of fun. It's quirky. Definitely.
All right. Didn't think a full review was going to happen, but okay. Going quicker, Fate Grand Order, Absolute Demonic Front, Babylonia. I'm still working on that one. I think I'm probably about 13, I think, episodes. It seemed like they've taken a break, but they're supposed to go 21 episodes. It's been a lot of fun. I, of course, again, take my word with a grain of salt, because I am a huge fan of Fate Grand Order. So pretty much you'd throw a character at me doing something besides sitting there, moving around. They can be just talking about ramen. I'll probably freak out and make today's dinner with him and my family. I mean, they were literally eating and I was having fun. But no, they went to Babylonia, of course, or Mesopotamia, in 2655 BC, going in there on the seventh singularity of the original Fate Grand Order mobile game. Each one of them has singularity where they're trying to go in there, find a holy grail, and remove it from it, because it's causing these singularities to corrupt, having a holy grail there. And he's basically trying to stop the demons. They basically have gods. The goddesses are currently kind of forming a pact. The humans are fighting against them. And Ritsuka is kind of caught in the middle of trying to find a resolve of it and save everybody. So it's been a lot of fun. Finally got Ereshka Gil in the party, which is something I've been looking forward to a long time. Love Ereshka Gil. Of course, I love Ishtar too, but they both have their kind of charming side to them. A lot of fantastic battles. Ishiwakamaru versus What's-Her-Face was absolutely amazing. Amazing animation, insane sound. They, for some reason, love to make it sound like my speakers are blowing up. So that's the thing for the sound designer. That's what he does. I know a lot of people hate it, but that's what he does. A lot of funny moments, especially with Jaguar Man. I love that Jaguar Man's both absolutely nuts and goofy, but at the same time, like, viciously dangerous. So it's a fun little chemistry there. Love Gilgamesh moments, him and Enkidu. Love their story. Looking forward to more, but yeah, I'm waiting for it to come back on, because it seems like they've stopped. I'm not sure what that's about. Blade of the Mortal, I haven't watched that since probably early December, when everything kind of went down, so I'm not really going to say much on that one. It's a cool take on Blade of the Mortal. I love the new Seiyu for Manji. Of course, we really love his voice acting, so it kind of fits. I feel a little bit disappointed in several of the action scenes. It seems like, what was it, Leiden Films is struggling with it at times. It doesn't seem like a lot of the action scenes are animated. Like, the fight between Manji and Makie, it felt like half the fight was just staring at random objects in the alleyway as they're fighting. And so I was very disappointed in that. But other than that, they have them really cool. When it does animate, the action scenes are really cool. I'll just say that. Hakurin, the assassin lady, her backstory was absolutely fantastic. Before I left, Rin was trying to sneak into another area and her change in character was fantastic. I didn't expect that out of her as a character, but she really did kind of step up and did something really cool to trick the officers at the gate, which was cool. So, yeah, like I said, I don't really have much to say because it's been a while, but still watching it. Haruno no Sora, we have not caught up on that, and we're like probably 10 episodes behind at this point, but it was, I don't know, I think at some point you not acknowledge the fact that it was 50 episodes, and I kind of agreed. I do want to go back and watch it to see if it keeps up pace, but I did kind of see it slipping at times. So I'm not sure if I want to go back and get caught up on it yet. I probably will, but it's going to be one of those ones where it's going to be when everything else is caught up.
Yeah.
I might.
Well,
I don't have any problem with it. It was a good show.
We're in a weird spot where we're trying to catch up on a whole bunch of junk. I mean, just a whole bunch of shows. So,
but Babylon, the last one we have is Babylon. That one, I was dying waiting for the next episode to come out when they took a break. But Babylon is, I don't know what I'm going to do with Babylon. I'm really struggling on if I will have this be a contender in 2019 or if I should wait and hold it into 2020. Because my problem is that, let me get out of the way. Babylon essentially is following this guy who is an investigator, and at some point a political guy that actually wins a political battle for a district in Japan decides to create that district with laws of their own. They're trying to make an autonomous zone. And one of the things he enacts is he wants to enact a suicide law to allow for suicide. And while it makes everybody question if they should allow that or not, it quickly turns very vicious as people start committing suicide seemingly without their... They seem happy when they do it, but it obviously seemed like somebody's pulling strings. And there's one character named Ayamagase who is working for this political leader who essentially, it seems like she has the ability to manipulate people with her voice and the words. They haven't really completely explained it yet, but she is manipulating people in some way. Even one of his coworkers commits suicide, and there should have been no reason why he should have done it. So it really kind of messes with his mind. He's desperate at this point to find this Ayamagase and stop her. But it's constantly a game of cat and mouse. Now, the first 9 episodes, up until the point that they had that break, this show, every episode was a 10 out of 10 for me. I loved it to death. Every episode ends with, like, crazy stuff happening, and I just couldn't wait for the next episode. Each one was a cliffhanger for the next one, and I was loving it to death. Production values, animation, music, everything was fantastic. Now, once the show came back on, it had a lull, a really bad lull. It kind of went away from Zen, away from Ayamagase, away from Kaiki, who is the political guy, and starts talking about how this idea of suicide is spreading to other countries. And then it spends like an entire episode introducing the president of the United States, who's this really cool guy. He's actually a quirky dude. And then finally, like 2 episodes later, at the very end of the second episode, they come back to they come back to Zen, and it's starting to come back up again. So it's like, I was settled at the point of episode 9 that even if that's all you gave me, that was the anime of the year. That's all I needed. It was a fantastic series, even though it would have been a terrible ending. So I'm struggling. Like I kind of feel like if I wait until the end of next year, I'm going to have forgotten about it, or at least not be as hugely hype on it as I am right now, because technically I've only been watching 3 episodes in this season or this year. So I'm struggling. I'm going to decide on it because we have to do our deliberations tomorrow as of our recording of this. But it's easily my anime of the year. Even with that lulling 2 episodes, every other episode was just top notch. I absolutely love this series. Great writing, excellent directing. I'm pretty much at fault for a lot of the nominations for it on the anime awards. So, and that can
that's just it's a great series. You should check it out. So can't wait to watch the last two episodes.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. And that was funny because when I first put in the nominations, they like immediately after they announced that they were doing the leg, and I'm like, what the crap? So there you go. That's fall 2019 anime season review. That's it for fall.
Ooh.
So like I guess I kind of mentioned we're going to be doing our deliberation recordings, so we'll be releasing that soon enough. And then like I've mentioned before, we'll go on to our winter 2020 music first impressions discussional. At the discussional, it's been a long time since we've done the news, so there's probably tons of stuff to go over. That's probably gonna be a long discussional podcast. But we thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed our fall reviews. If you guys had any shows that we missed that you think we should have checked out, always let us know. We're always glad to hear you people what you're enjoying and what you think we might have missed. But yeah, it was a decent season overall. A lot of really big hit ones in there. The conclusion of some big returning and continuing series. And looking forward to another year of anime. But yeah, we're at talkingspirit.com. You can go there for any new and old great community forum links, top social media links, right side, and all that good stuff. And we thank you all for listening, and you all take care.
Os.
Oh, God.